From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 8th day of August, 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow. He's a GlobalCom Research.com out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll hear about the weather forecast from Eric Snodgrass at Nutrien Ag Solutions. And if you can stay with us for the whole of the hour, you'll hear all of our Commodity Week program on our home radio station, including our panel today, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing, Brian Split from AgMarket.net, and Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities. If not, many of these radio stations will carry it over the weekend, and it's up online right now at WILLAG.org. Well, we are on the fairgrounds here at the Illinois State Fair. Our thanks to the Illinois Beef Association for letting us borrow some space and Wi-Fi to bring you the program today. We're now joined by Mike Zuzlow. He's a GlobalCom Research.com out of Atchison, Kansas. I don't know, Mike, are you a State Fair person? I have been all my life, but I grew up working with them and here nearby and really love State Fairs and being on the grounds and seeing what's happening just day in and day out. How about yourself?
No, I always have the county fairs we always go to, Todd, but the state fairs were growing up in Ohio and being about 3 hours away from Columbus. It was just a little bit too far to go on a weekend because I didn't have an agriculture background, even though I lived in a village of 900 people and everybody was a farmer unless they worked in town, and my dad happened to work at a hospital about 30 miles away, so we didn't get to the state fair hardly at all, maybe once or twice.
I can see that happening. I worked the state fair from the time I was really young, sometimes with the American Legion and then on my own, so just different, and I was 20 minutes away, so it was fun, and it was, the older I got, the more fun it was, actually. So
we always had the kids in the 4-H for the county fairs, and that's always just a great time to catch up with people and get outside the work environment and be able to let down some.
It is. 4-H is a fantastic thing. And the Ore Building this weekend, if you want to see 4-H, come check out the 4-H exhibits in the Ore Building. You will be just impressed, I know, here on the Illinois State Fairgrounds. The thing you might not be impressed with, though it wasn't as bad as I thought, even though we were making some contract lows this week for the marketplace. What do you think of it?
A lot of deja vu, Todd. I tell you, deja vu when it comes to a wheat-led market to the downside with Black Sea in the headlines a lot. A new 5-year low in soft red wheat made this past week, even though we've got about 7.5% less stocks worldwide than we did a year ago. And we're at the lowest levels in the world wheat supplies in 10 years. Corn numbers, even worse, you know, new crop corn. Compared to where we were last year, down about 13% as far as world corn ending stocks and stocks to use at the lowest level since 2012, 2013. It kind of dawned on me earlier this week when I was thinking about all this that you and I and the other panelists on Commodity Week last month had a conversation about a potential commodity demand low. And I felt that very strongly again this week when I saw the export sales and the fact that the dollar continued to weaken and is down about 10% year to date. So I think the battle lines are drawn at this point with the WASD report and how big of a supply it can lay on the market and whether that overshadows, as it has, the demand improvement in the export front that we have continued to see, especially in the corn and to a lesser degree now in the wheat market as well. So for me, it's about the report. It's about the weather for the beans next week, because we are looking at a little bit more hot and dry bias, at least in the early part of Friday's trade. Midday noon models got wetter, and it seemed like beans kind of tanked the whole situation. And the corn building up to new highs early on gave way with the beans. So that those two things, and then the U.S.-Russia potential meeting, what does that do to the crude oil and the wheat market as well? But circling all the way back around between the wheat-led market again this week and the fears of how big of a corn yield we're going to have, it feels a lot like last year at this time.
It would be nice if they came out with a 183 or four, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the nose. I mean, I've been hearing a lot of my colleagues say that we haven't dialed in a 185 yet. I do disagree with that. I think we're all the way up at a 187, given the fact that 375 September corn sure feels a lot like a 2.3 billion bushel carryover. So that's kind of the thing that I'll be looking at is, okay, what's the harvested acres? What's the yield? What do you give me for corn demand? Do you take old crop corn down because we're 101% on exports for 24-25?
Yeah, so we'll have to watch that for the crop production numbers, those WASDE figures coming out on the same day. That happens Tuesday next week. What do you think about the beef figures that you've been watching come out of the CME Group in Chicago? A stunning kind of trade over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it really has been. And you know, it could be the beginning of the end on the cattle side of the equation. Because of Friday's trade and what it did after making such record highs at least twice this past week. But it could also be the situation where the trade just got seriously tired, didn't get any new news to feed itself, and the cash market and the futures market came together very nicely by Thursday's close. But it does put one on notice because this has been a market where you've needed bullish news to keep feeding these new record highs. Once we run out of that, we probably are due for a substantial setback.
So I take it next week you'll be watching maybe for that number, I know you will, and hoping that that will put a demand bottom in it with a supply that's not as big as the trade is working with today.
Yeah, exactly. And the corn, and you know, the other thing that ties the corn and the cattle together is that feeder corn spreading, and where the Commitment of Traders report really highlights that and shines a light on how net long funds are in the feeders and how net short they are in the corn. Friday's numbers will be kind of a barometer to where they sit as of this past Tuesday, and that'll be a really big deal to me next week at this time.
Thank you much.
You bet. Thanks, Todd.
That's Mike Zuzlow. He's at globalcomresearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Just one news item. Today marks the 20th anniversary of the Energy Policy Act. The landmark legislation in the United States promoted the use of renewable fuels like ethanol and biodiesel. Former CEO of the National Corn Growers Association, John Doggett, was VP of Public Policy in its Washington office at the time.
You know, looking back to all the time and all the effort it took to finally enact legislation that required ethanol to be in our fuel supply. It was an amazing time. It was a huge effort. And the thing is, I think that got it done was the fact that the entire industry was united. Everybody made an effort to get those votes. And I remember sitting at my desk in our Washington office and getting calls from Capitol Hill from offices saying, would you please have your farmers quit calling? We're going to vote with you.
The Energy Policy Act of 2005 led to the 2007 RFS, or Renewable Fuel Standard legislation that requires 10% of the nation's gasoline supply be made from a renewable feedstock. Today, the United States produces more than 15 billion gallons of ethanol made from corn to fulfill the goal of creating a stable, renewable fuel supply. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by 15th District Congresswoman Mary Miller. We're walking across the Illinois State Fairgrounds in Springfield on Ag Day. Thank you, Congresswoman, for being with us. Can you tell me about Washington, D.C., the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, and how you see that playing out over the next several years in your district across Illinois?
Well, I think that's going to have a huge impact both on the entire country for economics, but for Illinois, and in particular for Illinois Ag. We had to get the Tax Cut and Jobs Act put into permanent law to preserve the family farm, and then also to incentivize investments. There's just a lot of provisions in there that will help basically, you know, farms and households be able to pay their bills, basically.
As you look forward to things that need to come for agriculture, E15 is among them, I'm sure, on your list. Continuation of some of the farm bill and farm programs that need to take place probably before the end of the year. How do you see those coming to fruition?
Well, of course, I've been a big supporter of the E15, and we need to find outlets for our amazing corn crop. Our farmers are doing such a good job that they're basically bankrupting themselves. We don't have the prices we need. We've been below break even. President Trump cares deeply about our farmers, and he wants to advocate for better trade deals. He's been in for 8 months. He's already done great things. He's not abandoning the farmers. And for us, I'm on the Ag Committee. I'm one of the few family farmers there. So I understand deeply the situation we're in. But two things have put us here. Well, this has been long term. Agriculture has been hand to mouth for decades. My husband and I have been farming for 45 years, and it's hand to mouth. We love the lifestyle, and that's why we continue on. But in recent years, under Joe Biden, we had skyrocketing inflation, energy prices, fertilizer, all that, and then a very passive trade policy. So Trump understands two things. We got to get inflation under control, and we need to amp up our trade and get new trade agreements and new markets.
As you know, I do markets and weather on WILL AM 580 every day. Your family's involved in that process, has been involved with the elevator system over the years. Some of the analysts are very concerned about the trade deals and the length of time it generally takes to get them done and what impact that would have on this year, particularly as it's related to China. They have yet to import any soybeans from the United States. Are you hopeful that a deal can be cut, and how soon?
Well, I'm hopeful because President Trump has proven that he loves our country, that he cares deeply. And his first term, he did not abandon the farmers. And he understands using leverage to get better trade deals. So I'm very hopeful.
The other part is with the One Big Beautiful Bill, there is some concern that the amount of increase in money that will be coming into the agricultural countryside may simply flow into the input side. Have you heard that as it's related to the cost of fertilizer and seed, and that it looks really good, but it may cause issues over the long run?
I don't know. I have contact with all kinds of farmers and people from the ag industry, and there's different opinions on that.
Any final word as it relates to the ag bill, or the farm bill that you hope to get done yet before the end of the year?
Well, agriculture is such a big part of our American economy and Illinois economy. President Trump understands that. And I just, even though it hasn't happened yet, I want to encourage people that he is in the court for the ag producers. And so am I.
On the education side, University of Illinois, of course, very involved within your district. What concerns do you have at this point about funding there, if any, and what do you see going forward?
Well, I support all kinds of research and development, and we need to keep that going. And, you know, I support excellent education, but we are $37 trillion in debt. So we're looking for ways not to leave our children and grandchildren in bondage. So we want the dollars to flow where they're going to be the most impactful.
Thank you very much. Thanks for taking time with me today.
Come.
Mary Miller is Congresswoman for the 15th District in the state of Illinois. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.
Let's check in now with Eric Snodgrass at Nutrien Ag Solutions in Agrible. Hello, Eric. Thank you very much for being with us. It's hot here on the Illinois State Fairgrounds. I do want to know what you think that heat might mean for the crop so far this season.
Well, Todd, as I think about this, you've got some pretty serious heat coming in this weekend. Maybe a chance of storms to relieve some of that coming across, you know, the central part of Illinois. But most of those big storms were way back in the northern plains and upper Midwest as we kind of work our way into this weekend. All right, so let's talk about this heat. I made a map today that looked at the number of stress degree days, and that's how you add up the temperature above 86 every single day. And you want to stay under about 140 or 150 of them. Right now, we're approaching 150. And we know we've got more heat coming. I mean, the temperature tomorrow at the fair is expected to be well into the low 90s. So that's one thing that I'm getting concerned about, plus the overnight low temperatures, which have been so warm for much of June, well, late June, and all of July. Now, it did back off. The temperatures cooled off for the first 5 days of August, but here we are back under heat advisories as we kind of work our way into the second full week of August. Now, We know that from satellite, the crop looks absolutely amazing, right? The NDVI values are off the charts. But as we're getting more folks to like walk through fields, they're starting to pick out some problems, which may mean that some of these really high estimates on the size of the crop just aren't there. But the reality is even if you took off 8 or 10 bushels on some of those estimates, we're still looking at a huge corn crop overall.
Is there any rain in the forecast?
Todd, you know, as I think about where the precipitation's coming from, it's the same quarter I've seen it all year. It's kind of going through the Canadian Prairie, which is great. We got to put out the wildfires that are north of the Canadian Prairie. It's then diving into the Northern Plains and working its way across the Central and Eastern Corn Belt. But if I had to find a spot that was going to stay dry through this, it's the Southern Plains. It's parts of Texas over towards sections of the Mid-South. And then honestly sneaking all the way through to the Northeast, which to be honest with you, the Northeast is having a bit of a drought situation and we need to keep an eye on it. They do grow crops we compete with there.
What do you suppose the rest of the month of August and early September might look like?
You know, Todd, as I look out there farther, I mean, the month of August will likely stay hot. I think we have better signals of staying on the warmer side of average, which comes back to the first question you asked. Is this going to be impactful on the total yield number? But I think we stay hot and stormy around here for the most part. But remember, as you transition later into August, that's the definition of what hot and stormy is begins to shift, right? Our wettest time of year is spring into early summer. Well, late summer is a bit different. And there's always the wild card of the tropical season. And I'm going to be honest, we've been watching a couple of things that kind of have me just going, okay, be prepared. This is the kind of thing that we can sometimes see in the models that gets us worried. And what I'm talking about there is I think as we get out past the 16th, 17th, and 18th, there could be a tropical system that tries to work its way into the Gulf or at least toward the southeast coast. Right now, I'm hoping it's a phantom storm in the models, but it's been pretty consistently showing up in all of the forecasting systems, which just has us a big concern. So the later we get into the, into August, I think the more that we'll have more drier weather, save any sort of tropical system. But big question is, how does September and October, November shape up for harvest? Now, if you look over the last 5 years, with only one exception, we have been drier in our fall timeframe and much warmer. There is a long-standing kind of trend lately that is showing us warmer falls, and it's also showing us with drier falls. We have a weak La Nina brewing that could help that out this particular year. So I'm going to go ahead and stick with persistence on what this fall could bring us when you think about the last few falls stitched together. But the big thing we'll be talking about once we get into October is South America's crop, and is it going in fast? And there are still some signs in the global models that suggest it will be wetter than average to start their growing season, which means they'll probably get in quick and get moving quick. So that's it, Todd. Those are the big things I'm looking at.
Hey, thank you much, Eric. Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.